Now, Ian Jessup on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. BC Ferries' core problems are fares, falling traffic, and money it gets from the provincial government, according to the Ferry Advisory Committee chairs in their submission to the BC Government Budget Consultations Committee. The report is entitled Coastal Ferries, an Unnecessary Crisis. Here to talk about BC Ferries and give us his findings of his research is Norm Farrell, who has the blog Northern Insights. Norm, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ian. Thanks. It's good to be back.
Now, in their submission, the Ferry Advisory Committee chairs say the corporation needs smarter spending because the current plan and vision of the corporation is not sustainable. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's quite true. The I had a look at the traffic statistics over the last while, and then I also had a look at fares. And probably we should touch on fares first. In 1975, the Vancouver to Victoria or to Washington-Schwartz Bay run cost $5 for the car and driver.
$5?
In 2013, wow. It's $66.75. Now, if you advance those $1975 to today's dollars, that comes out to a little under $21. Now, since we're at almost $67 now, the fare on that particular route, and I think that's applicable to other routes as well, has risen over time by three times the rate of inflation. Now, despite those rates of or the fares have gone up, and that's of course contributed to significant falls in traffic. Mm-hmm. If you look at the traffic over a 5-year term, say up to 2004 to 2009, and then compare the traffic of the last 2 years, it's down in both passenger loadings and vehicle loadings by 10%, more than 10%, as a matter of fact.
So, Norm, when you say down 10%, is it down? Was it down 10% from 2004 to 2009?
Well, I looked at the average of 2004 to 2009, which is somewhere around 8.5 million vehicle loadings, and then compared that to what it's been the last two fiscal years, and these last 2 years have been down 10% over the 5-year average that preceded it.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
So I think it's unquestionable that the much higher fares have contributed to a decline in value or in volume. And so BC Ferries has been struggling to maintain their revenue growth because each time they push up the each time they push up their fares, that actually leads to a decline in traffic or contributes to.
Yeah, there's almost a price resistant point where people say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Absolutely. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue that's important to the report that was issued by the Ferry Advisory Committees. And those Ferry Advisory Committees, I think, are an interesting one because they're somewhat like what Washington State does, where they ask people within the communities to get together and to contribute to policy-making decisions. What we have at BC Ferries, though, is an additional couple or three layers, because the BC Ferries Corporation not only has its executive management team, but it has a board of directors of 9 individuals that have over a period of time, I think the 5-year average cost was close to over $600,000 a year for the director's fees and expenses. So there's 9 individuals that serve on the BC Ferry Services Company, mm-hmm. but then they're supervised by 9 additional directors who are on the BC Ferry Authority. Now, they're not paid as much, but they don't have a terribly busy schedule. They only have, I gather, 4 meetings a year. But that costs another couple of $100,000. And so you've got pushing towards $1 million just for these boards of directors. And there's no similar type of organizations in Washington State. And I think that contributes to some of the cost. You have this very expensive board of directors system. They're supervised, those 18 individuals are further supervised by two ferry commissioners who are separately appointed, and they're each making about six figures a year for part-time roles as commissioners, the commissioner and the deputy commissioner. And again, there's no correlation in Washington State to that. So we've got a very top-heavy system. And despite all of this expertise that we're apparently hiring, or apparent expertise that we're hiring, the traffic has been declining at a rate faster than in Washington State, and the fares have been escalating at a higher rate. So I think we need to really relook at the whole management structure that's behind BC Ferries.
Norm, I'm still blown away by your comment on the 1975 fare for driver, car and driver, was $5, and that $5 today would be the equivalent of $21. But here we are in 2013 paying $66.75, three times more than we were in 1975.
It's quite amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it's astounding.
I recall those days because I was a ferry rider back, actually right from the mid-50s.
Now, ferries would probably respond by saying, yeah, that's true, but the price of gasoline was probably about 50 cents. Or price of fuel was about 50 cents.
That's true, and that perhaps gives rise to another criticism that I have of BC Ferries, is that I believe that they should be leaders in the conversion to liquid natural gas-fueled ferries. Denmark, or Norway actually, is probably the world, well, is definitely the world leader. There's a number of ferries and other ships that are being fueled by liquid natural gas. We in BC have a large reserves of natural gas, and yet we've done rather little towards moving the ferry fleet into being fueled by natural gas. That, to me, makes very little sense. And we actually have some private companies that are quite advanced in technology of converting diesel engines to natural gas. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be further down that road. And I think the cost of fuel could be reduced quite substantially in the long term. There's a conversion cost, and I think that's the problem with BC Ferries, is that they've failed to replace their fleet or to create reserve vessels so that they cannot now afford to take ships out of service in order to convert them to natural gas. So, again, I argue that this is an indication of poor management over a very long period of time.
I'm just looking through this Coastal Ferries submission to the Budget Consultations Committee, and it's interesting. They make a number of points here. They want the government to consider the following factors. Sustainability starts with affordability. So it speaks to exactly what you're saying, that people are not riding the ferries because they're too expensive. Number two, user pay keeps climbing and needs to be reversed, which speaks to number one. Traffic and fares, which also speaks to number one. We need funding for capital or fares will climb even more. History offers a useful lesson, number five. Number six, treating coastal ferries like other provincial transportation will eliminate the crisis. Seven, there's no silver bullet. And eight, which is I think is really important, a vision for ferries starts with a vision for coastal communities. And would you say that there is a vision for BC Ferries?
No, I think that's been a problem. And again, I think that reflects the management structure, is that we should have been paying more attention to these user groups in the various coastal communities that are up and down the west coast here, that individuals that have been using the ferries for a long period of time have not been listened to in a very good in a very effective way. Typically, the government has turned to its friends in the political circles and business circles to staff the boards of directors and the advisors and so on. but the users and the consumers of the product have been left out of the equation to a large degree. And I think that has been a long-term difficulty, and it continues.
Norm, as you were speaking, Gary, I was just flipping through this document by the ferry chairs, and I'm very intrigued by your proposal for liquefied natural gas as a fuel. And BC Ferries in 2008 used 4.4 million liters of fuel. In 2012, 4.3 million liters. That's down 3%. So while the fuel consumption has gone down, ferry fares have still gone up.
That's true, but I guess that's on a basis of the cost per liter of the fuel would yeah. have risen quite dramatically. But I think we have the ability to control that over the long term, again, by using natural gas, which we have a domestic supply. Their problem, of course, is how are they going to convert the fleet to do that? But the
natural gas, if you listen to Christy Clark, natural gas is going to be our savior, Norm.
Yes, well, if you believe that, that's can sell you a bridge.
That's a time for another show.
That's true.
Yeah,
but you know, one of the things that we've talked about previously is the fact that the operation that Washington State has of its ferries is got some of the same sorts of problems, but they're paying probably 20 or 30 or 40% of the cost of administration that we're paying here in BC. And I think they actually have a more effective method because they pay more attention to the citizen groups, the user groups that exist there. Of course, they don't have this large overhead of directors who are meeting periodically. And I think that BC Ferries has recently they've taken a lot of, or some heat in the media. I think Mike Smith is in the Vancouver province has written a little bit about it, but they've tried to get some of their other friends in the media to look at to give a different story. Mm-hmm. And one of the examples of that was a editorial that appeared in the Times columnist, and they were very defensive and trying to give the BC Ferries a positive view of BC Ferries. But if you look at it, they've had rather little to look at. They say that people may complain of the reservation system, for example, the $20 or so that it costs to make a reservation. But Times columnist says it's voluntary. If you don't like it, don't use it. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Don't use it, get left behind. Mm-hmm. Then they're saying another improvement is the installation of electronic signs in a couple of places that inform travelers of how long their wait will be. And I'm thinking, wow, if that's the best achievement that we've had in managing these ferries in recent times, then please let's try a different system.
We're talking to Norm Farrell, who's a blogger. He has a blog, Northern Insights. If you'd like to get into the conversation on BC Ferries, our number is 386-1161, or you can email us at talk@cfax1070.com. We'll take a break and come right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Norm Farrell of Northern Insights, the website and its blog. We're talking about BC Ferries. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, our number is 386-1161, or you can email us at talk@cfax1070.com. And let's go to the phone lines and talk to Larry. Larry, you're on CFAX. Go ahead.
Yes. I've traveled on BC Ferries for a large number of years, and currently I drive a commercial vehicle, just a truck 26 feet long, and it cost me $168 one way to travel on BC Ferries.
Wow.
So my brother also drives a motorhome, and when he comes to visit, he uses Washington State Ferry, which is a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really fed up with the nonsense of BC Ferries playing the game of being a tourist ship. We don't need Wi-Fi. We don't need white spot food. All we need is an hour and 40 minutes of travel. And they seem to be playing this whole thing up as a tourist thing, which is silly. It's an hour and 40 minutes.
Larry, you say you pay $168 to travel. Is it a 26-foot commercial vehicle?
Yeah, 26 feet. Yeah, it's a tractor trailer.
Okay.
But it's just the tractor itself, 26 feet long. And, of course, it's over height because of the sleeper. But it's $168 one way.
That's pricey.
Yeah, it's pricey.
So how often do you do that?
Normally I leave my truck on the other side and use that park and go.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's, for me to come home for a couple of days and then turn around and go back again, you know, it's like over $300 just to come home. So I generally leave it on the other side. However, once in a while, I got to bring it home and wash it and clean it and do whatever.
Yeah.
But I get really sick and tired of this whole thing with the BC Ferries. We have Wi-Fi and we have this food and we have that food and we have the gift shop. It's an hour and 40 minutes. Like, just give us some seats.
Yeah, great. Appreciate your call, Larry. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
I guess, Norm, that's pretty indicative of the complaints that people have is the cost of BC Ferries. We keep coming back to it, but the cost is just prohibitive for some people.
Yeah, I don't think, though, that having Wi-Fi or, having some of the facilities on board ship actually creates the cost, because those tend to be revenue returners.
Yeah.
I think the governance structure is the one that really contributes, because there's nothing coming back there. Say, Donald Hayes, who's a successful businessman in Vancouver Island, is the part-time chair of BC Ferries, and over the last 3 years, he's made over $300,000 as fees for serving as a director on a part-time basis. And he's got 8 other people serving on the board with him, and then another 9 people overseeing his board, and another 2 ferry commissioners beyond that. Now, there you're talking about real money. The food services and the various other elements that they have on board ferries actually returns a profit to BC Ferries. So that's not a real significant cost contributor.
Norm, I don't know whether you have the figures in front of you, but the provincial government's contribution to BC Ferries, I believe, has gone down over the years. Is that correct?
Well, in relative terms, yes, I think you can say that. This past year, there was an extra subsidy that they put in. The federal government subsidy has grown slightly as well over time. It's kind of interesting to the fact that they put in something like an extra $21 million in subsidy this past year. That allowed them to achieve what they called a $15 million profit. And that, mm-hmm. of course, was used as part of the justification for paying bonuses to the management. So you've got rising fares, declining traffic, and yet somehow the management are still able to realize their bonuses. Now, that's kind of a strange situation, particularly when the profits that they've incurred arise only because of additional subsidies.
They not only have bonuses, they have short-term bonuses, long-term bonuses. And I was absolutely flabbergasted when Transportation Minister Todd Stone gave them 30 days to come up with something new, and they still couldn't do it.
But that's kind of interesting, too, because the government at various times says that this is an independent private company and we don't have any ability to control what they do. And that's why they have this management structure in place. And yet when things get embarrassing politically for the government, they're quite willing to step in and make some action. It doesn't seem to be very effective, because I think there's resistance at the board level. Those people are saying, leave us alone. But I think Todd Stone hasn't been there a long time, but I think he's at least trying to do something. It was actually far worse 3 years ago than it is today, despite the fact that most of the same directors are in place. And that's why I would suggest to Todd Stone that the first thing he wants to do is to clear out those boardrooms that are supposedly overseeing overseeing the organization.
Let's go to the phone lines and talk to Ken. Ken, you're on CFAX.
Yes, thank you, Ian. I'm relating to Norm's comment on administrative costs and everything. I am just a regular working guy of reasonable intelligence, and I would challenge BC Ferries to give me a phone call and set me up with a position of any one of those administrators, you know, of the several figure salaries. Give me 30 days, you know, in their job position, and if I can't do 80% of what they're doing within 30 days, they could show me the door. But I think... let's just see how much work they really are doing and what the qualifications, you know, really are required.
Yeah.
If there is indeed enough of a job to do.
Ken, I appreciate your call. Thank you. I've just got one more call in. We've only got about a minute and a half here. Ron, you're on CFAX. Go ahead.
Thanks, Ian and Norm. I echo the previous caller's sentiments, and I want to know from Norm how the directors, both the two levels, are appointed, and how partisan are the appointments.
Okay, Ron, I'll let you go and have Norm respond to you.
Well, it's one of these self-perpetuating systems where the directors appoint the directors, and some of them are appointed by the provincial government, but you can bet that there's a very friendly group of associates that get together. For example, one of the individuals that's serving on the board is Jeff Plant, who was previously a member of the provincial government and has done a lot of work and continues to work as a partner in a downtown law firm in Vancouver. And yet, somehow we have to pay him, I think, over $50,000 a year to serve as a director. So these people, I don't think, have any particular special skills, but they're self-perpetuating